You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation, brought to you by Go Wild. Go Wild is the fastest growing social media app for outdoor enthusiasts. If you love to hunt, if you love to fish, camp, hike, if it has to do with the outdoors, you're going to love Go Wild. Now, here's how you download it. It's very simple. All you have to do is go to Google Play Store or wherever you download your apps, find it, search for Go Wild, download it, and instantly you will be part of the community. And what is this community all about? It is about the outdoors. You're going to love it. If you have more questions, check out the website, timetogowild.com, and download the app. It's time to get wild.
Welcome back to the Rookies in the Backcountry podcast. I wanted to take a couple of minutes before we jump into this show here and remind everybody about the giveaway that's coming up. You got 2 weeks to submit your hunting stories in order to be entered into the giveaway. I'm not going to hit all the details too hard right now. Jump over to backcountryrookies.com. You can find all the details and the prize packages for the giveaway listed over there. Or I recently released a YouTube video describing all of the prizes and talking through some of the rules, and I actually have the prizes there with me, and I kind of show them to you and go through them. So just a quick reminder, there's an archery story giveaway package and a rifle hunting story giveaway package. So go over there and check them out. And then there's some information about it over on my Facebook page also, which is Backcountry Rookies. So everything I have social media is Backcountry Rookies. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, website, all that stuff is Backcountry Rookies. And then, of course, now the podcast has been switched over to Backcountry Rookies also. So hopefully that makes things a little bit easier. And with that, just real quick, I'll tell you, there's a set of Vortex Viper HD 10x42 binoculars that's in the prize package. Mountain Hunter Box has a one-month box for each winner. Go Hunt has a $250 gift card for each person. Onyx Hunt Map or Onyx Maps has a one-year premium membership. Backcountry Hunters and Anglers gave some prize packages too. They gave some really cool public landowner baseball caps and public landowner water bottles, and then some stickers that say "Keep public lands in public hands." And then the two winners will also be able to be a guest on the Backcountry Rookies podcast. So you'll get to come on. We'll sit down, talk to you. I'll do the interview, and we'll talk about your hunting story and let people hear your story. So I think those stories are very important that people talk about their successes or their failures or whatever it is, regardless of who that person is. Anyway, everybody, nobody's excluded. Everybody can enter. I just want to hear some more stories. I got a ton of good stories from archery, and now that all the rifle seasons are starting to kind of wrap up, I expect there to be a lot of good rifle stories too. So get them submitted. You got 2 weeks left. With that, let's jump into this show. This is a really, really good one. I think you guys are going to enjoy this one, so stick with it. I've got Chris Horton from the Elk Addicts. Chris and I have been talking on Instagram and direct message for quite a while about coming on. I think he brings a lot of really good knowledge to the rookie idea, or that newcomer to the Western big game hunting. He's been doing it a long time, and I think he's going to be able to provide us with some really good information. Along with Chris, I also have on, you guys may know, or I did a podcast with him a while back, Jeremy Ansel's on here as a special guest host. And I brought Jeremy on because he hunted with Chris down in Colorado in, was it second rifle season, guys? Second rifle?
Yeah, second.
Yeah. Okay. So they had the opportunity to hunt together. And I just, you know, kind of adds another layer to the podcast and another personality in here too. So should be pretty cool to link these two guys up and really talk about hunting this year. With that, Jeremy, you've already pretty well introduced yourself on the show. So I'll let Chris, if you want to introduce yourself, talk a little bit about your background and your hunting background. And then I'd really like to hear what the roots of Elk Addicts is and where did that come from, and what has it developed to now from the people that may not know. I don't know how people don't know what it is, but if they don't, kind of what it, you know, what is it, where are we at with it?
Yep. Well, like I said, I'm Chris Horton. I live here in Idaho and have grown up elk hunting. Many of us, my father got me into elk hunting and started me at a really young age. He started taking me out when I was about 3 years old. Grew up in an area where elk were close to home, and began calling elk at a very young age. The first grunt tube I made was out of a piece of cardboard, and my dad took me out in a September, and the first time I ever bugled, I'd been practicing with my voice, and first time I ever did it, I got a response. And pretty much that was the magic moment that made elk really special to me. I enjoy hunting deer and enjoy hunting, you know, ducks and turkeys, you know, and basically everything that I can here in Idaho. But elk is really the animal that I am passionate about. And, as I grew up, I made a lot of mistakes. I was not somebody who harvested a lot of elk. And the people I hunted with in general didn't harvest a lot of elk. They're difficult animals. They live in difficult country. And, instead of being discouraging, it pushed me harder to learn and grow. And so much of this was before the age of social media. Now we're, the ability to learn, with courses like Corey Jacobson's course, Elk 101, with groups like Elk Addicts, where people can ask questions and learn. The learning curve certainly is much, quicker, I feel, now than it used to be. But still, I mean, there's a lot of that only in-field experience really can, build. So
now,
I guess,
let me interject really quick, because I think that is a really fantastic point. The quickness where people can learn, but you'd really need that boots on the ground. I feel exactly the same way. I did Corey Jacobson's course. You know, this 2018 was my first year being out. I did Corey's Elk 101 course, tons of podcasts, just kind of everything I could get my hands on. But literally the first day that I stepped into the woods, I walked in the trail and kind of stepped off the trail and looked around and thought, now what the heck am I supposed to do? Right. So right. I had it. I nailed it. Right. I had everything I needed to when it came to a computer and a keyboard and a podcast, but I didn't, as soon as I stepped into the woods, it was a whole new game. So anyway, I'm sorry to interject, but I thought that was really cool that you said that. Cause it's true. Yet. So true.
Well, I've been archery hunting for many years now. I've been rifle hunting since I could carry rifle elk, 12 years old, 31 now. So I'm talking about 19 years. And I tell you what, this season was difficult, had a lot of adversity this year. And there was certainly a lot of times that I wasn't sure I knew what I was doing. And I'll tell you what, that was frustrating. And, you know, but that's, I guess, part of the lure of elk hunting, right? It's not easy. It's not, you know, most elk hunting is public land, steep, big, high elevation country, you know, and those animals live there. That is their home, right? For them to go right up that mountain is nothing. For you and I, we're huffing and puffing to get up the mountain.
I may have had to take a few breaks and find a tree to sit down on a couple times. And yeah, huffing and puffing doesn't fully describe it.
You know, and that's, I guess, that's the beauty, you know, that's, you know, I loved elk hunting. And back 2012, I actually started guiding for an outfitter that I was friends with their son. And so I guided several years for them up there, which before I would hunt, right? And I'd go up for a week with family elk hunt. I'd go scout. Your time was more limited in the field. Then when I started guiding, not only did I get more time in the field, which more experience means more knowledge, I suddenly was able to tap into the knowledge of Tom Carter, who's been up there for 30 plus years, right? Studying, watching these elk, seeing what they do, the way they react. You know, to listen to somebody like him explain how and why and what these elk did, you know, to take that knowledge, mesh it with what I saw in the field and what I was learning. While elk in Colorado, elk in Idaho, elk in Montana, the terrain varies some, the elk vary a little bit, but for the most part, a lot of the calls, a lot of the actions, the way they react, the way the wind, the way, you know, a lot of those things that make elk elk are the same. So putting those pieces of the puzzle together makes it to where, you know, going new areas, which is something I love doing. I love going to areas I've never hunted and just trying to figure it out. Makes it fun. I did it in Washington last year. Went up there with Jeremy to Colorado this year and really enjoyed it. Passion for elk hunting is kind of what caused Elk Addicts to come about. You know, Elk Addicts were very strict as far as our rules. We don't allow bashing, and while it's social media and people some disagree on stuff, we try to definitely limit the amount of unnecessary, attacking of each other, right? Because as hunters, we need to stick together or we're going to lose what we love. And I was honestly kind of tired of the social media before I started Elk Addicts, as far as people attacking each other, bashing each other, people making, not just making fun, not just poking fun, seriously trying to belittle somebody. And I decided, look, I just want to make somewhere where we can have fun, talk about elk hunting, get away from a lot of the social media BS that's out there, and have fun with it. So I started that group, December 1st, 2015, called Elk Addicts. Created that group, reached out to a friend of mine, Bob Morgan, and said, hey, you want to, join me on this? And he said, yes, surprisingly. The rest is history. We added some friends and just tried to make it a place where people enjoyed and felt comfortable coming and asking questions. And, now we're at over 93,000 members, and which is crazy to me. I never expect, I remember when it started, I thought, oh, it'd be cool if we hit 10,000 someday.
Yeah.
All right. And now we're approaching 3 years and we're rolling towards 100,000 elk hunters, and which is crazy to me. And, and I think a testament to the, our rules and the way we try to run things is our growth. And, people want to be there. People join and they add their friends and they have fun with it, and they stay. They don't come check it out and be like, holy cow, this is ridiculous. People are attacking and bashing, and we just try to have fun with it. And then we've got some great partners that have donated a lot of cool gear that we've been able to give away to our members, either, from Exo Mountain Gear or Hoffman Boots, we just try to have fun with it. And it's a great time. The best part about, honestly, Elk Addicts has been all the people that I've been able to meet. And that's honestly what makes it special.
I would have never met you if it wouldn't have been for Elk Addicts.
Yeah.
Yeah, the community over there is really good. And just last night, right, you had posted something on there. I don't want to ruin the story, but I'm going to ruin the story a little bit. So you had posted that you got a deer, and immediately there's 100 comments, and I think it was Donnie Drake. Somebody jumped in and said, hey man, I'm right down the road. I got a pack. Do you need help? right? And people just willing to me, it's really, really awesome, the community, whether it be Elk Addicts or Jeremy's XO page or my tiny little Backcountry Rookies page that I've got. But the community that seems to come together around all of it is just, I don't know, it really seems like a cool community to me. And that's just, I thought that was really neat last night when people were already volunteering to help you pack out. So
it definitely would have been a big difference if it had been a elk down.
You probably would have been asking for people. So
last year I packed a bull out. I went to Washington and I actually hunted solo, and I killed a Roosevelt over there in the coast by myself. And it was 3.5 miles one way from the pickup in the rainforest.
Wow.
So that was fun. I certainly wish I would have been closer to home at that point and had some people to come help, because, 21 miles total trip in the day, and a couple hundred pounds of meat plus horns plus gear in 3 trips was a lot. And I was definitely very tired when that finished up.
Yeah, I bet. Testing the limits of that exo pack too, I think.
I think it was more my legs were giving out way quicker than that pack was, that was for sure.
Yeah. Cool. So now that, you know, if hopefully everybody that listens to the show is already a member of the Elk Addicts Facebook page, but if they're not, now hopefully they will be. So now that we've introduced that, I want to move into a little bit of trying to share some knowledge with the audience that we have. So from your point of view, what is the most important things for a person that if they were planning a hunt, right, they're coming out from Indiana or Virginia or you know, whatever, pick your state, they're coming out to hunt. What are the most important things a person needs to plan for before they come out?
Honestly, the absolute most important aspect is the ability to get where the elk are. I don't care what gear you have. I don't care how good a shot you are. If you cannot get to where the elk are, then you're done. And I cannot stress, I mean, guiding gave me a great perspective, right? I had guys who showed up in great shape, and basically all those guys always got a shot at an elk. Now, some of them missed, you know, it's beyond my control as far as that goes. But I saw a huge difference between the guys who showed up ready to hike mountains, ready to push themselves, versus the guys who showed up saying, oh yeah, I can suffer through it. The problem is unless you have actually been and seen what the size of the mountains out here, most people they cannot honestly picture what it's like to climb 2,500 feet of elevation. And that's hard to get across to somebody. It's like a lot of people live at 250 feet above sea level. Right. And we're hunting up here in 8, 9, 10,000 feet of elevation. So not only do you need to train to where you can actually at your current elevation, you need to also train enough to know that you're going to lose a ton of what you have just by that elevation gain. Yeah. And
it was, that
takes days.
That was a big learn. Yeah, absolutely. And it took us when we went out. So my hunting buddy Neil was coming from Indiana. I think he was at about 600 feet, 800 maybe. I was coming from San Antonio at about the same elevation level. And the first couple of days really worked on us. And then by about day 3 when we were finally acclimated and we were really starting to be able to climb the mountains. But it took a couple of days of burning out our legs and our lungs and everything else before we were comfortable hiking around out there.
And the thing is when you get to elevation, so one of the things I always try to tell people when they're coming from lower elevation, try to get there at least a day early. Like, right, if you're planning to hunt Saturday, try to get there Thursday or as early as you can Friday. And something I personally like to do if I've not already been in hunting shape and moving and hunting, is the first hunt of the year. I get there and I go for I run. Not like a 5 mile run, but like, you know, go run a few hundred yards one way, run a few hundred yards back, you know, get yourself breathing really hard, get your body moving, and basically get things kicked into gear and drink a lot of water. It's really common to see a lot of people get dehydrated when they get to that high elevation. And then you're right. You're fighting not only elevation, but you're fighting dehydration. And it's, starts you off on a bad leg as far as that goes.
Yeah. We saw it firsthand when, for our hunting trip, Neil, my partner from Indiana suffered from a lot of that. We got up to, I want to say we were at about 10,400 feet and we had to come back down off of the mountain because he mentally and physically both, he couldn't climb any higher. And I mean, he probably could have, but mentally he was already telling himself that he was broken and we had to come off the mountain. And then he had to sit out the whole next day and rehydrate because he had dehydrated himself. So he basically missed an entire day of hunting because of the elevation and dehydration. So it's what you're saying is exactly right. Yeah. It happened. I watched it happen. What's that, Jeremy?
I was going to say.
And say it doesn't get any easier the older you get either.
You're not feeling down on yourself because you're becoming an old man, are you?
No, I'm just feeling pretty good because I can still make it to the top of the mountain.
Yeah.
I can vouch for him for that.
Yeah. And Chris, you'll probably know this too. So Neil and I, we're both older, middle-aged men, and we had Gus, who we called Gus the Goat, but I think you got to hunt with Gus a little bit in Colorado too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, Gus was fun. We were actually joking because we covered a bunch of miles in one day because the two of us actually, we were joking it was nice to actually hike with somebody that could actually go the same speed as you. And I forget how many miles we put on, but we put on a solid probably 14, 16 miles in the day just looking for elk. We had a couple encounters, but we dropped it down in one hole, and we shot in-reach messages to Jeremy and my dad pick us up at a whole other area because where we'd parked the truck where we were popping out was about a 4 or 5 mile drive to back where the truck was, and we really didn't want to walk the road back to where the truck was, so where we popped out, and it was a pretty where we finished up. When it got dark, we had about it was like 1600-1800 foot elevation climb right up out of the hole where we were at, and it was a good one. Coming up out of there in the dark was you know, you were at 11,000 feet. It was fun.
You two were made for each other.
Right? I enjoyed hunting.
So was that your first time hunting Colorado?
Yes, sir. Yeah, that was.
Okay. Are you going to go back?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I actually have some points there. So I'm actually hoping that next year I'll pull a archery tag. Good friend of mine lives in Alma. And Remington Baker, he's actually one of my admins also on Elk Addicts. So.
Yeah, that's cool. I'll probably end up back out there too. Very awesome country, just beautiful out there. So, if anything, the scenery is worth going out.
Right. I was actually shocked how rolling it was up on top.
Yeah,
a lot of mountains, it really rolls versus a lot of where I hunt here in Idaho is a lot more little pointier at the top. I'll just put it that way.
It's all up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I felt like Colorado was that way too. So I don't know if anywhere you go and there's mountains, it always feels like it's up. Arizona even feels like it's up out here. Yeah. So you were talking about when you used to guide. Now, outside of the physical fitness part, what are some of the mistakes that you saw people make when they came out for their hunt?
Well, honestly, like you said earlier, the next biggest one was the mental toughness. Everybody's always gung-ho on day one. Everybody is, right? It's the people who are still willing to push on day three as hard as they did day one, who often find success. Because, you know, elk are smart creatures, and they live, again, like I said, in steep country, and you got thermals, you got everything that go right, everything that go wrong. They're not a go out, hunt an hour and shoot something type animal typically. They're an animal that make you work for them. And, having the idea that I am going to push myself every day as hard as I can and then wake up and do it again is crucial in having a good hunt, because I've had guys that I've guided that day two, day three, all of a sudden they're just done, right? And they got 5-6 days to hunt. They've traveled from, you know, a thousand miles away, and they just want to sit at camp. A lot of these people, it's a once in a lifetime type deal, right? There's a lot of us that this is, we hunt every year, but for many people who travel, this is the first, possibly the last time they'll get a chance to do it. So you need to have the mental ideals that you're going to do it. It's going to hurt. You're going to be sore. Feet are going to hurt. Back may hurt. You know, things like that. Things are going to be sore. Often the best way to not be sore is get moving. Go do it again. Get things moving. Get the lactic acid out of your muscles. And you'll honestly feel better than sitting around, you know, doing nothing. And I've seen it up where I hunt myself. There was a guy that he hunted. It was opening day. He hunted the first day, right? We took off from our camp, hunted, and we had some elk located closer, so we weren't doing the spike camp thing, and we were just staying out of the wall tent. Came back. The guy hunted one day. He'd driven all the way from Michigan, hunted one day, and spent the next 2 days sitting in camp because he was done. He was broken. And
that's an expensive camping trip right there.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, and you just got to have the idea that I'm going to do this, you know, and, often if you know, you know, it's going to be tough, train for it, push yourself, right? Don't, when you're training, don't just be comfortable. You're like, oh, I can do this easily. I'm just going to keep doing it. But before you get there is the time to say, I'm going to put an extra 10 pounds in that pack and walk up those stairs 100 times, you know, to the point where I can't take another step, because it's way easier to do that than be looking at the bottom of the mountain and say, I can't get up there. The elk are up there, but I can't get there. And on top of that, right, you get to where the elk are, and now you get one down. You want to talk about work.
The work has just begun.
Get a bull down, and then suddenly not only are you hiking, you're now hiking with, you know, 70, 100 pounds of meat on your back, or 50 pounds, right? Depending on how much you can carry at a time. But if you're only carrying 50 pounds of meat at a time, you better have a lot of people with you, because that's going to be, you know, 5-6 loads of meat. If you can carry 75 to 100, you're suddenly talking about 3 loads. So that's where so much of your preseason training comes into effect. What we personally do here is we have some trails here that are about 3 miles in a loop and have about 1,000 foot elevation gain. And me and a lot of my hunting partners and friends, we hike it. We put, you know, 50 to 60 pounds of sand and bags in our backpacks. And we hike those trails with it, and we push ourselves to, keep up a good pace and keep moving, not taking breaks. And that will train you a lot better than running on a flat treadmill, you know, and, because that climbing with weight makes a huge difference versus running flat on a treadmill.
Yeah, when I trained, I did a lot of. I didn't have a lot of elevation to work with. But I would load up a pack with a bunch of weight. I think for a while I was doing like 85 to 90 pounds in the pack, and I think that helped me a lot. It helped me my shoulders and everything, and in my hips, you know, where you put most of the weight, and just training my legs a little bit. So I didn't struggle too much when I was in Colorado, and I like to think that that's probably part of the reason why is because I had done all those train ups, and that was four or five months, probably more than that, before I even went out, where I was doing that three or four times a week at least. So yeah, that's a good point.
One of the good things that people can find, right, while they may not have a mountain to climb, often places there's a high school football stadium or a set of stairs. So there's stairs somewhere that typically, you know, a parking garage, any number of things where people can just going up, right? There's nothing that you can really do about the elevation, the lack of oxygen, right? But what you can do is build muscles to have there, and then let your body, once you get there, start trying to, you know, build the red blood cells to where you can absorb more oxygen due to the lack of oxygen and be able to, you know, climb. But it's building that the leg strength and building your knees, building your back to be able to, you know, hunt multiple days in a row in steep country.
Yep. Good advice. Good advice. So there you go, people that listen to the podcast, mentally and physically prepared. This certainly isn't the first time that we've heard that. It's a reoccurring thing. So if it hasn't sunk in by now, hopefully by Chris saying it, it sinks in on this one. Let's transition out of that a little bit. Chris, I wanted to talk about your 2018 season that you've had. How's that been going for you so far?
Well, it's had a lot of ups and downs. I set out with a goal this year to kill a bigger 6x6 type bull with my bow. You know, and over the course of September, so our season here opens August 30th, runs through September 30th. So over the course of that season, I hunted 16 days. In that 16 days, I had 38 encounters with elk that were good encounters, at which either where I was close enough, I was communicating with elk, having opportunities to get a shot, maybe get a shot or spook, or, you know, right, close encounters. It wasn't, you know, by encounters, I'm not talking about a glassed elk at 1,000 yards. I'm talking about elk that I was actively interacting with. Out of all those encounters, I had 3 shots. I shot a branch. I missed a 5-point, and it was a big 5-point. Then I made a mistake that was something I'd never done before. I had history with a bull. He came out. He was a bull who I knew who he was. I've been trying to kill him for a few years. And I honestly, for lack of a better word, panicked. He came out and it was in an opening. It was a sage, kind of a sagebrush bench flat. And, I thought he was further than he was. And instead of ranging like I do pretty much every animal I've ever shot, I guessed the range and I guessed wrong. And I shot about a 310, 6x6, about 2 inches down from the line of the back in the backstrap. And, arrow went in about 2 to 3 inches was all. And I shoot a 518 grain arrow system, the Valkyrie system, with a super good broadhead, super sharp. It's a cut on contact. I shoot a Hoyt Nitrum Turbo. You know, so I'm shooting, you know, a 518 grain arrow at 284 feet per second. I mean, it's big and heavy and fast. And I made a mistake. I actually saw that bull again, and he had a few hours later, he had about a 4-inch dirty spot on his back where the arrow was gone. See him again after that. So unfortunately, you know, fortunately, he's perfectly okay. Unfortunately, it's going to haunt me for a long time making that mistake, but that was really frustrating for to basically have trained for a year, the scouting, the time, the passing on smaller bulls, the, you know, everything that leads up to that 10 seconds, right, that you get. And to make that mistake was rough, because that was the moment you lived for, the moment that I'd been waiting a few years on that bull, a particular bull, to try to I'd had other opportunities go awry. It's a bull that we have nicknamed Lucky, so now my buddies are calling him Super Lucky. So that was frustrating.
Is that going to be your focus for 2019, to go get Super Lucky?
Well, so on top of Lucky, so after that, about 5 days later, I was hunting another bull that I've got multiple years of camera on, and he's really big. So Lucky's only like a 310, and he's really not ever gotten bigger. He's got short tops, always has had them. He's got great big long threes, great big long fours, and then these little short tops that it's like, I always thought he would get bigger, he'd get bigger tops, and he just hasn't. But there's another bull in the area that is pushing 340. And I was going up in the mountain into an area that I like, and it's about a 1,200 foot gain in about a quarter mile. So it's basically straight up. So it keeps a lot of people out. Got up in bugled. Bull answers. And so I went to make a move on that bull. Start trailing the herd. Every time I bugle, that bull's popping back, but he's staying with the cows. He's not leaving his cows. They're moving. Moving towards a bench that I have been on, had put a camera, not this year, but the year before I'd had a camera on there. So I was familiar with where they were headed. And they bedded down in really close to that area. I snuck in. I got 40 yards from his cows. I could hear him up above, and I bugled, and he came unglued. He came charging right down to where I was. And he came, stopped at 46 yards wide open, and I'm not honestly sure what happened. I couldn't draw my bow. I was doing everything I could to get that, to draw it back. I've shot that bow for 3 years now. I've killed four bulls with it, couple bucks, bear. I mean, I've shot tons of tournaments with it. I mean, I've shot this bow again and again and again. I've shot it thousands of times, right? And I couldn't draw back. I like literally just my arms stopped working, and he stood there like 20 seconds and then walked off. So I honestly still don't know what happened. Talked to a couple people and say maybe I stopped breathing. So then I just couldn't, without realizing it, right? And then the muscles wouldn't work, nerves, adrenaline. I don't know. Honestly, I just, all these encounters I've had with bulls, all the bulls I've called in, and still to freeze up like that was frustrating. And
were you hunting by yourself, or do you have a partner with you when you?
Yeah, I was solo up in there. Yeah.
Huh. Wow. How interesting. That's a pretty crazy little story there. As soon as that bull walked away, you probably could have drawn your bow back just fine. Like it never even happened.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I did. Literally 30 seconds after he walked off, he bugled, and I was trying to figure out, at this point now I'm shaking, right? So I'm like, what's wrong with my bow? And I go to draw it. Whoop, goes right back. No problem.
Of course.
That was rough.
Yeah. That.
So between that, having three shots that went awry the year before, I fired three arrows during the September. I killed two bulls, one in Idaho, one in Washington, and I shot a coyote. Right? I shot, three arrows this year and didn't come home with, I guess I shot four because I did kill a buck in September. I shot and stalked and a mule deer when I was up there and shot him at 46 yards, but I don't know. It was frustrating, right? But what it proves is that, right, even after all the time, the time in the field and the mistakes I've already made in the past and tried to learn from, that none of us are excluded from making mistakes. Backcountry rookies, right? We are all learning every day we're out there. We make mistakes. And no matter how many years you've been hunting, how many bulls you've killed, you still can learn and you still can make mistakes. And that is, but understanding that every day is an opportunity to learn is really the first step in, becoming a good elk hunter. And the day you think you have it all figured out is the day that it will teach you that you don't.
Yeah, that's the day you can't draw your bow back, I guess, huh? Yeah. So I've heard that before too, where people really, really accomplished archers, people that bow hunt constantly, and 15 years that they've been hunting, and now they start getting target panic. Just that sort of random, like, where did it come from and why do I have it now? But you hear about stuff like that. So I guess, I don't know, maybe go down to a 50-pound bow for next year.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep my kid's bow. It's got like a 35-pound draw weight,
Yeah, there you go.
I'll limit myself to 20 yards.
So how was the Colorado hunting out there with Jeremy and Derek and Jordan? That whole crew that you went out there with was a bunch of good guys.
Yeah, that was a ton of fun. They left Thursday morning, I believe, Wednesday, and they were down there. So my father and I left 10 o'clock on Thursday, and with the idea we were going to drive, 4 hours, 2-4 hours, pull over, sleep, did the road warrior thing, and we pulled into Jordan's house at 10 o'clock Friday morning. It's a 12-hour drive. I made it there in 12 hours. I didn't even stop. I just literally drove all night. I was super excited to get down there, super excited to hunt it, and a couple of 5-hour energies helped along with that. So between the excitement and the 5-hour energy, I wasn't sleeping. And so we drove through the night and set up camp. They had already picked a spot. They had a little setup already there. We get there, set up the wall tent, and Jeremy's like, let's go scout. So mind you, right, this is now like 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I've been awake since 6 o'clock on Thursday. This is 5 o'clock Friday evening. It's 6 o'clock in the morning on Thursday, right? And so then Jeremy and I did a hot lap of 5 miles through the the timber.
Just a little scouting trip. Nothing big.
And that's at the point that I realized he was as crazy as I am, because we're like, we got to try to find something. We found an elk. We did. Just a little late because he was killed probably in first season. So we were a little behind on him.
We didn't waste any time hunting in there that next morning. So that was covered.
Exactly. It was cool. No one had hunted there before. So day one, Derek ended up shooting a 5x5. And, was it day one or day two where Jordan killed the buck?
Evening of day one.
Okay, so it was day one. Yeah, because the one thing we found while we didn't find any elk, When we were walking out, we managed to see a group of three bucks, and they didn't want to leave where they were. They let us literally walk like 150 yards past them, and they just kind of watched us and kept feeding. So we're like, well, guess I'll probably work for Jordan. So him and Jeremy went in the next day, next evening, and they came right out where they were, and they ended up shooting one. So that was fun. Opening day, my dad and I, we headed up. We saw one bull in the morning. He ran across. We had no shot. He had some stuff going on because it's a 4-point minimum. So wasn't sure about if he was legal or not. So, but it was too early, too quick to get a shot anyways. That was fun. Really cool country. Day two, is when Gus and I went on our little, adventure. We ended up bumping one good bull in the timber. He disappeared before any shot. All you got to see is just kind of a flash of tan and he was gone. Then we had another bull come by us. Again, pretty cool country. But, all right, we were in elk. Day three, we were in elk again. My dad had a spike stand in front of him at, you know, 100 yards. But, of course, that's not, the, you know, it's, again, the 4-point minimum. I seen elk also. So, yeah, I mean, it was cool. We seen elk every day. So for having never hunted an area, to basically be on elk constantly was pretty cool for an over-the-counter, you know, general public land area. It was pretty fun.
So what you're saying is you'll hunt with me again.
Yeah, I mean, my dad's, we had such an awesome time down there. It was fun. I mean, and like most elk camps, the people you're with are what make elk camp. The reason elk camp has the allure or the ideal behind it is that you're hunting, but it's the people you're with. And I mean, we had, it was the definition of elk camp, right? We had so much fun and the jokes and the stories and, you know, it was what elk hunting it is about, right?
Hey,
that's it right there.
Hey, Jordan made breakfast every morning.
Yeah, he's a good cook too, so that one helped a lot.
Well, he's invited to my camp next year for sure then.
Right.
Our breakfast was pretty much a cup of instant coffee and a power bar and then hit the mountain.
Right. My normal breakfast is a couple packs of the instant oatmeal with some water in them and suck them down in a, you know.
Yeah, and then head out. So
yeah,
so we were going to record this show last night, but I get a text message from Chris that said, hey, man, I just put a buck on the ground. Can we postpone this thing? So tell me about that long, epic hunt that you did on that buck last night.
We've got a late season hunt here in Idaho that the unit literally is the outside edge of Boise. So get done with work. I literally had like, from the time I decided I was going to go see if I could see a deer, find a deer, to dark, I had like 30, 35 minutes, right? So I drive there, park, it's like 5:10. I grab my Zeiss binos up and I'm glassing. There's deer. Holy cow. Okay, well, there's a couple does. And it's an either sex hunt, but I always hold myself to shooting a buck. And there's a buck. I'm like, huh. Okay, so then I kind of did the Superman change, right? I'm sitting in work clothes. I'm wearing work boots, Wranglers, shirt. Now I'm digging in the back, ripping out a camo shirt, throwing a shirt on, grabbing pants, grabbing my hunting boots, getting everything, trying to tie boots up as quick as possible, right? And, you know, of course, lacing boots up feels like it takes forever when you're trying to be in a hurry. Grab my bow, grab my release, go, okay, got everything, grab my backpack. And start hauling as fast as I can up the hill. And it took me about 20 minutes to get up where they were. It's like 5:30-ish, right? It's getting low light. Like, I've got 5 minutes of shooting light left. And I see the buck, range him. He was at like 58 yards. And he's kind of on this little secondary type ridge. So I go to draw, and he walks over the ridge. I'm like, oh, shoot. So I literally undo the arrow, put it in my quiver, and take off running across this face, right? Across this little bowl. And, you know, so it's like a 50-yard straight a shot. It's like 100 yards by the time you drop down in the draw, come back up. So I'm literally running as fast as I can. I'm not being quiet at all. Pop out up on the ridge. There's the buck. There's like 3-4 does right there. There's the buck. He's feeding on the other ridge. So I'm trying to catch my breath. I'm like trying to get an arrow knocked, range him. He's at 66 yards. Adjust. I've got the option 8 sight by option in archery there. So it has a floating pin. What I like so much about it is because it flips open, so I can basically run it like a single pin, but I've got the fixed pins as well. So I flip it open, so I've got just the one pin to focus on. Get my breathing normal, range them again, still at 66 yards, draw back, pin settle, pin, choo, let it go. And it just, boom, smash him. He takes off running down this little ridge. They meet at the bottom where there's some brush. It's like 40, 50 yards. He crashes in there, doesn't come out. Good sign.
Perfect.
And I'm sitting there and I'm looking, it's like 5:35. Of course, we were planning 8:30. So now I'm like, okay, I'm going to be cutting this pretty close.
Yeah. So
at this point, it's now getting dark. So I sit down and I don't move for about 10, 15 minutes. Now it's getting real dark. And I'm like, okay, I better get my headlamp out. At this point, I realize there's a problem. The pocket I normally keep my headlamp in, there's no headlamp. Well, that's not a big deal. I'll get my flashlight out. No flashlight. I was like, this just got really interesting.
Yeah.
So I turned the flashlight, or cell phones anymore have light, a flashlight on them, if you would, right? You can turn the flash on. So I do that so I can see like 3-4 yards in front of me, right? Not like I could normally see with my headlamp that I can see like 50 yards. Around a nice bright, black diamond headlamp that I can see really, really well. Just for such purpose. I get over there now and I'm trying to use my phone to find tracks. I have an idea where he was. And so I find some tracks. No hope in finding my arrow, right? It's gone into some brush and I can't see but a few yards. I'm like, there's no way to find this arrow. So I start kind of slowly working down the ridge. It's about 20 minutes after the shot. And at this point, it's getting, really dark. And I find some blood. I'm like, okay, that's a good sign. Walk down. I get down kind of to where I'd heard him crash into the brush. And I stop and I can hear kicking, right? Oh, great. So I'm not sure if he's death kicking, if I didn't hit him as good as I thought I did. I don't know. So now I'm turning the light off. Right now I'm just sitting in the dark. So I told myself, okay, I'm going to give him 30 minutes, make sure everything's good. So now I spend a long 30 minutes sitting there just in the dark, right? Some other deer came by me, right? I can hear them walking through the brush above me. And so sitting, wait. Finally, 30 minutes goes by. And turn the flashlight back on, get back on my blood trail. At this point, I'm still kind of on the hill. As soon as it leveled out, that blood trail went major. Like it was following, somebody had used a sprayer just spraying blood. So at that point, I knew it was probably a death kick that I'd really heard, but rather be safe than sorry. So came up on him. He was dead as a doornail. I did have my knife, so that was a good.
One out of three. Yeah. That's pretty good.
Right. So that was interesting. So ended up getting him cut off and getting him off the mountain. But definitely recommend not leaving both flashlight and headlamp in the pickup, especially when packing out an animal, because cutting up with by using your cell phone light, don't recommend it. It's not a super effective way for cutting up an animal.
No, I can imagine. Well, so that's kind of leads me into what I wanted to talk about last, and that is essential gear for a backcountry hunt. So obviously headlamp or at least flashlight is essential. What else do you keep in your pack that you think is something that you just don't want to leave behind in the truck?
So up where we elk hunt, we do a lot of overnight camping, just simply because of the fact that we're often going in, 5-6 miles, and it's 15, 18, 25, 3,000 feet of elevation gain, depending on where we're headed. And so walking 10, 12 miles a day before hunting, just to get to where we're hunting, is a lot of extra miles. So as far as my backcountry gear, I personally run both a couple of the different exchangeable blade knives, simply because of the fact that I don't carry a sharpener. The little sharpeners to carry back there, you can get them pretty sharp, but man, as sharp as the disposable blade knives are anymore, yeah, as sharp as those blades are, it just doesn't make sense to me to carry the knives and stones and stuff that I honestly grew up with, right? We used to sit down, you'd start cutting an elk, the knife would dull out, then you'd sit there and try to get your, you know, work to get your knife back, get the edge back, and then start cutting again. It's just, you know, and the fact that the disposable blade type knives weigh a lot less than a lot of the fixed handle drop point type knives that a lot of us used for many years. So, you know, that's something I do. My number one backcountry backpack knife is honestly the Havilon Titan. And while I like the Outdoor Edge disposable blade a little better because it's thicker, the reason I carry the Titan with me is because the fact it's actually a two-bladed knife. So it has the Havilon blade on one side, but then it actually has a standard thicker, heavier blade on the other side. So when you're trying to cut joints or get into stuff, that you actually have a heavier knife. So you really got two knives in one. And if you break something on one, you've got the other knife, right? So you're again cutting weight without having to carry multiple knives. And then when it comes to some sleep system, something that I've spent a lot of time, a lot of money, honestly, on figuring out a good sleep system for myself. I personally run a Nemo tent. Nemo Blaze, two-person tent. It weighs 2 pounds and gives me enough room to actually have all my gear in there spread out and not feel cramped, but while still maintaining a lightweight. I run a backcountry quilt made by Enlightened Equipment. It's called the Enigma, and it's kind of a little different quilt because of the fact it actually has a closed tote box, almost like a mummy bag, but it gives me more room. What's really nice about it is it's a 10-degree quilt, but they use a 950 down on it. So the long, wide, so I can actually get underneath. I'm 6 foot, and I can actually cover myself completely with it. It weighs 21 ounces. So,
wow.
I mean, so it compacts down super small, weighs nothing, and it's super warm. So you know, by going from the mummy bag, the 20 degree mummy bag I used to run, to that, literally saved me almost 2 pounds. And then when it comes to pads, I actually run a couple different pads depending on the temperature. The lightest weight pad I run is the Thermarest Neolite. So it's a lightweight pad. But if it's getting cold, so I want a higher R value because the quilt doesn't have a back, then I actually have a climate pad that has a higher R value for more insulation. I mean, now you're talking about my total camp, tent, sleeping bag, or quilt, and pad is right around 5 pounds for the entire thing.
Yeah, that's how much my tent weighs.
Right?
Yeah.
So when you're moving and trying to hunt and carry stuff, I mean, ounces equal pounds and pounds equal pain. You know, so when you're hunting for days on end, that's where the ultra light type stuff really comes in handy. The other thing is on my food. I make sure that everything I carry is at least 100 calories per ounce. I don't carry, you know, food that's, you know, low calorie, heavy. I try to make sure it's dense, but making sure that you can, you know, get a day's worth of food in a pound and a half, 2 pounds, and maintain.
Let me ask this, Chris. So thinking about these new guys, the backcountry rookies that are coming out and, you know, just starting out, and there are a lot of them, to include me and Chad, working on budgets. What do you recommend for gear going that direction?
So going that direction, honestly, a company that does a great job as far as pretty budget-friendly gear, like I mentioned earlier, that climate pad is like, I think, $70. I mean, versus so many of the other pads that are $150, $200 to save a few ounces. And then the mummy bag, their KSB 20 is a 20 degree down. So it's right at 3 pounds. So it's not super light, but it's not heavy for a bag. And I think they are like $120 or $150, right? So you look at that versus like a $300-$400 type quilt. So, you know, starting off, you know, you can get into it less expensive. Another good thing to do is watch places like either, like we have Elk Addicts Classifieds or forums or Craigslist. I mean, they're certainly looking for secondhand stuff. Will save you more money than anything, and oftentimes you can get a lot better gear for a lot better price if you know, because there's a lot of people who go try it once and decide it's not for them, so then they're selling their gear. But the biggest thing is making sure that you're warm and going to sleep well, because if you don't, you're in for a long hunt, you know, right? Being able to recover, let your body recover at night is crucial, and be able to hunt days on end without burning out. So, you know, one of the things that I would definitely, if you're doing the backpack thing, make sure what you're sleeping on and in is going to work well for you. Sleep at home, sleep on the ground at home with your pad and make sure you're comfortable. Make sure you can sleep through the night, right? And, you know, test it before you go. But yeah, as far as like brand new gear, Climate is a company who, you know, I have no affiliation with, but makes, you know, good gear at a much more budget friendly price than others. You know, and you know, like, right, you pay for in an ounce or two or 4 ounces heavier, but you can save hundreds of dollars.
Right.
You know, the probably the most important thing out of all your gear is your footwear. because if your feet get toast, right, climbing up, climbing down, carrying a heavy pack, carrying your gear, you know, that's really honestly probably the most crucial piece out of everything.
Yeah, I agree there. So I upgraded this year and I could tell the difference.
Right. I mean, I personally wear some boots out of actually an Idaho company here called Hoffman Boots, because, you know, they build their Explorer boot specifically for what we do. There are a couple of North Idaho brothers, Jim and Tom, and one's an archery guy, one's a rifle guy. Now, their family's been building logging boots and lineman boots for many, many years. The hunting boots are actually a pretty new. It's only about 2-year-old deal for them that they basically started the hunting boots because of their passion to elk hunt. But they're building boots that are designed for exactly what we do, right? They are Idaho elk hunters, and they know what's important in a boot to make it perform in the areas that we hunt. And, you know, in a boot that good ankle support, a good rand around it to protect your boot, because, you know, the granite and the shale that we hunt is really rough on boots. It's a comfortable boot. They put good insoles in them versus so many that you see in the market. And, you know, it's the, you know, they actually, you know, keep you dry. Also, I mean, that everybody's feet are different, right? Everybody's going to have to try on their own pair of boots, find what works for them. But, you know, make sure that if you're coming out hunting, that whatever pair of boots you're bringing, you've broke in. Wear them to work, wear them hiking, wear them, because if you've not got your feet conditioned, you're in for a rude awakening when you start going uphill, downhill, and your feet are trying to, you know, go, you're side hilling and stuff. And because if you blister up, you're done. You know, it's not something that recovers quickly. It's not, you know, if you tear your feet up, that's the quickest thing to end a hunt. And, you know, short of falling and seriously hurting yourself.
One thing that I did with my boots this past year, 2018, I bought them really, really early in the year, but this is just a little nugget of knowledge. I bought mine at a place called REI, and I think most people are familiar with REI. It's an outdoor apparel and clothing and boots and whatever. They carry about everything for outdoor recreation. Anyway, REI has a 1-year, no question asked, return policy on boots, on everything that they have. And I wore a pair of boots. I probably put 200 or 300 miles in those things. And then for some reason, I started having some problems with them, and I started having some pretty serious ankle pain. And I think it was 6 months after I bought them, I walked into REI and put them on the counter, and they took them back for a full refund 6 months and a few hundred miles later. So that's just something that if you're really testing out boots, they feel good in the store. You go out and you put 100 miles in them and they don't feel good anymore. It may not be money lost. You might have the ability to be able to exchange, return, if you know, depends on where you buy them at.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, with that, Chris, I think we'll start wrapping it up. You got anything as like a parting thought, or, you know, one last tip that you might want to throw out?
Well, I mean, about the only other thing would be to, between camp and boots, is making sure you can carry it. You know, whatever backpack you're going to wear, make sure I definitely recommend, as far as a pack goes, an internal frame type pack that you can carry gear, you can carry meat. I'm personally, you know, I run Exo. I mean, but, you know, they make an amazing pack, but not everybody for their first elk hunts going to want to go out and spend $600 on a pack. But it's just a good example of the style of pack I'm talking about, where it's got an internal frame. It's comfortable to wear all day, every day. You don't need two backpacks. You don't need a pack frame and a day pack. You know, the bag comes off so you can put the meat between the bag and the frame. You know, look at style, pack style like that, because then you can carry your camp and your meat, and have just one pack. But, you know, that's probably as far as the the true backcountry thing, you know, your feet, your camp, and your the ability to carry it on your back is, you know, bows are going to be partial to people, arrows are going to be partial, camo is going to be partial to what people like, but you know, the main focus is the ability to get there by your feet, the ability to carry it, and the ability to be comfortable when you're there. That's the things you need to focus on the most, not, you know, what color camo are you wearing? You know, find something that works for you when it comes to that. But, you know,
find something that makes you feel pretty. That's what you need.
Right?
Keeps
you dry, keep you comfortable. That's it.
That's it. Quick, dry, and yep. Just one last question, and this is curiosity more than anything. What power of binos do you run? I know binos are really subjective. They're kind of like boots. They don't all fit. I'm just curious about what power do you like to run out in that you know, the timber and everything.
So as far as being able to do everything, because we are in timber, we are in open country, so hunt the high country, we do get stage flats. I run 10 by 42s. I personally run, this season I ran the Zeiss Victory SFs. Super nice pair of binos. We're doing a review on them for LKX, with Zeiss, and, super impressed. I mean, the low light, and they're pretty lightweight. They're bigger, a little longer than some, like the Swarovski SLTs I've ran before, or the Miopta Miostars. They're a little longer, but they're actually lighter and they gather light really well. But I'm also one that I tend to carry a spotting scope. I know it's extra weight for a lot of people, but when you're trying to cover a lot of country, get up high glass, if I'm not trying to go ultralight, I'll carry a spotting scope. And the 10x42 and then having a spotting scope kind of makes it where I can cover all, do all, use a phone scope and be able to film animals at distance before going and making moves. So I'm a big believer in running 10x42s and a spotting scope.
Cool. I was just curious. So how could people get a hold of you? What's your contact information?
My social Instagram is Elk Addict Chris. We also have the Elk Addicts Instagram. I run that along with a few of my admins. Then we have the Elk Addicts group. So you can look up Elk Addicts on Facebook. We have both a public like page, which is kind of just a announcement, almost platform, sharing platform. And then we have the actual group where most of our discussion is, in where we have the 93,000 plus and growing every day members. And then we do have the website, www.elkaddicts.net, and then we have our store, which we sell gear Elk Addicts gear and stuff at www.elkaddictsstore.com. So multiple ways, all those have contact us. It emails me. I basically handle all the contact information. So if you're emailing Elk Addicts, you're emailing me. So, you know, people, I reach out to me all the time with questions on social media, whether it's through Messenger, on Instagram or Facebook. So anybody listening, if you do have questions as far as elk hunting, something specific, don't ever hesitate to reach out to me. I love helping people grow and advance in the sport that I'm very passionate about. And, you know, if I don't know, I probably know somebody who does. So get you pointed at least in the right direction. You know, just want to see people come out and enjoy and have fun and share in the experience of something that, you know, I'm passionate about. So, you know, it's any way I can help people, I enjoy. Just don't ask for my spot. That's probably one of the number one pet peeves, honestly, on Elk Addict. People come on there and say, I'm coming to Wyoming. Where should I hunt?
Yeah,
you know, elk hunting spots are kind of like people's ultimate secret, right? So the number one way to quickly offend people is to start asking them where they hunt, you know? That's kind of one of those things where stuff like Onyx Maps, Google Maps, Go Hunts, you know, start doing your research, get an idea where you want to go. And then honestly, it's the boots on the ground, seeing what you see for game trails, seeing tracks, looking for rub. You know, that's going to tell you, because 99.9% of people, unless you have a friend that lives there, right, that will share information, they're not going to share information with you on over social media for everybody. So, but next. I'll give people an idea of what to look for, but I'm not going to tell them where to look for it.
But, next time somebody asks you, just send them an Onyx map spot that's like right in the middle of Boise. There you go.
Right.
Go find it right there. There's a whole herd that hangs out there.
Right.
Good. Well, hey, Chris, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it, and I appreciate you taking the time. I know you're a busy, busy guy, so thanks a lot, man. That was a lot of good information, and I certainly appreciate it when people share some of their shortcomings.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. And
yeah, you bet.
I really enjoyed it.
You bet. And thanks, Jeremy, for coming on, too. Thanks again to Chris for coming on the show. It was really cool to have him on. I've been trying to get him on here for a long time, and I'm glad we finally nailed it down and got all that done. And a lot of good advice there and a lot of good information. So hopefully you're able to take something away from that. Next show that I'm going to have on is I'm having a friend of mine. His name's Jordan Whitlow. Come on. And Jordan's going to talk to us a little bit about hunting on a budget and how to get involved in this backcountry hunting. And be on a budget. If you don't have the money to buy that whole brand new kit and brand new pack and brand new boots and new bow and all that stuff before you go out hunting, we're going to talk through some of that stuff. And we both are going to talk through it, because I have some of my stuff that's budget also. And I think this is a really good time to hit all of that budget information, because people are getting gift cards for Christmas, and there's going to be, you know, people might be out there spending some money on some good backcountry gear, and there may be an idea that we have in the show that's a little bit better, where you can save a few bucks and maybe get two pieces of gear instead of just one. So anyway, Jordan's coming on. He was also successful this year, so we'll talk a little bit about his hunting story too, but really we just want to hammer down that how to get out there on a budget, because I think a lot of times people are afraid to jump into that backcountry hunting world because they just think it's too expensive to get into it. So tons of good information coming on the next show. And again, as always, thank you to the Sportsman's Nation Network for having us on here. It's cool to be a part of this, and Dan's doing such a good job over there with this network. He's got so many good shows, and I'm just really, really thrilled to be a part of it. And thanks, Dan, and thanks to all the guys on the Sportsman's Nation Network. So with that, we'll catch you in a couple of weeks. Thanks for listening.